And we have an 80 degree temperature reading at this hour, and 9:30 on a Monday morning gets me the opportunity to spend a little bit of time this morning with City Manager Ed Gordon and frequently members of the city staff. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Charlie. It's good to see you on this Monday morning. Beautiful Monday morning in Bartlesville, Oklahoma.
It's a great day.
Good place to be is right here at the radio station under the air conditioning with you.
Thank you very much. We appreciate that. Certainly, thanks for some excellent weather for Freedom Fest.
That was a great event. Went down there. My goodness, there was a lot of folks there. I think you reported hundreds, then you turned it to thousands.
Yes.
There was thousands. There were a lot of people down there.
There were a lot of people. You look at the numbers, and it's hard to estimate how many because we're spread out. And
well, it is over several blocks.
Yeah.
And I don't know whether the drone guy, Kevin,
yes,
had his drone up so that people heads could be counted.
I believe that he was.
But that would be interesting to find out how many. And of course, the Kiwanis, what a great contribution that is to the community and to all those, Mike Dronick, Sharon Hurst. I know I'm leaving people out, and
sure.
You hate to do that. But those are the primary people that you interface with, and what a great job they did, bringing together all the entities that are necessary. And again, Bobby Robinson and the Parks Department, and Matt McCullough and the Building Maintenance Department with Keith Henry, who's over the Public Works Director, and Fire Department was down there providing just a little bit of fun spray for the kids. And then you, Mr. MC, with your hosting and the music that was provided during the fireworks.
Flashback did a nice job in the core on the live music, and then Sharon, I believe, put together the music to accompany the fireworks.
Well, it went just compliments to all, and a tremendous July 4th celebration, recognizing our birth of freedom, July the 4th, and appreciate all the input of all the people and the hard work that was done by all the fire department, police department, and all the folks at the club that put it together.
Well, they did all the hard work. I got to fly in at the last minute, kind of like Batman and Robin, and just MC the event.
Are you talking about Evan and Phil, or Phil and Evan?
Well, if the appellation fits, we'll let them wear it. Yeah.
And we're trying to figure out what that dynamic duo, Phil and Evan, what they would be noted for, combating poor statistics and things, baseball or something, or sports.
I think just widen it out to inaccurate sports information. Throughout the year.
I'm in with that.
Yeah,
Charlie. A couple of things.
Okay.
First, today is the 10th of
10th of
July.
Today's
the 10th of July.
I just mentioned
to the public that it was 51 years ago today that Janie Gordon asked Janie Lawrence at the time asked me to go steady with her. I'm just going to announce that publicly. I was stunned that I said yes. All right. I'd mention that's coming up on the 16th of this month.
Congratulations, Janie, by the way. I'm glad that the two of you came to an agreement, however it happened.
I'm sure I'll hear about this. Charlie, just a little quiz for you, for the public, just some things that I find interesting in history as we think back typically militarily.
Yes. The invasion of Sicily on this date.
Yeah. It was.
Yes.
And then in just a few days after this, on July the 16th, 1945, at 5:29 in the morning in the AM.
Okay.
And what is now called the White Sands Range, Alamogordo, New Mexico.
Yes.
A place that was called the Desert of Death.
Yes, okay.
Was a test that took place, conducted by a group of about 425 or 30 scientists that lived out there in this area.
What a place to live temporarily, but yes.
They lived temporarily, and they conducted a test called Trinity. J. Robert Oppenheimer picked the name Trinity out of a poem, but at least it's accredited to him. And of course, Enrico Fermi, who is kind of the father of atomic energy, if you read history, and Edward Teller and others, Edward Teller being the father of the hydrogen bomb.
Correct.
I don't know that I'd want that moniker for the rest of my life, but but there, that test was conducted, and it's the day the sun rose twice, as 5:29 in the morning, a 22 kiloton device implosion plutonium device was detonated in the desert of New Mexico. Mm-hmm. And there began the atomic age with that test of that first nuclear weapon, giving birth. That device was called, nicknamed the Gadget, giving birth to Little Boy, mm-hmm. and then Fat Man. Two further devices that were used to bring an end, a conclusion to the Second World War. But I just like for folks to think about that on the 16th of this month, 1945.
That would be next Saturday, I believe.
Yes, that's right. I won't see you between now and then, but I just mentioned that as a day in history. That's as today is Sicily and in Italy.
Yes.
As that invasion began, that process began, had begun. A couple of things. I would mention that we had a dedication of the Eddie Mason Park. Juanita Mason was there out in Oak Park. That had the honor of naming that park that's just on the north end of the old school property, mm-hmm. The Eddie Mason Park. And of course, Juanita, his wife, it really is Juanita and Eddie both. There's a great 50, 60 people came to that. We had some hot dogs and in the dedication, the family was there. But what a great event to be able to name after a council member who lobbied to get a park on the north end of Oak Park.
And I think I want to just delve into that slightly. Part of his motivation, I think, not only to have a green space there where the school existed, but also because of some laws concerning activity that
Megan's
that,
law.
That, yeah, that Megan's law. I couldn't think of which the name of that mm-hmm. that prohibits certain activities within a radius of parks and schools.
Well, and he lobbied to get the money with this other city council members. Of course, Eddie represented the entire city.
He had two careers of public service, really.
He did, and he was a police officer, I think for about 25 years, and then served as a city council member for about 8 years. Mm-hmm. That he's on the council.
Two terms,
and did a great job of representing not just Ward 4, but he represented the just as Alan is doing a great job representing Ward 4. Eddie did the same thing, and just in recognition of him, and he is missed still to this day. But what a lasting legacy!
Yeah,
his vision lives on, and we appreciate the work of Eddie Mason and Juanita, who loaned us Eddie. I'd mention something else there. If you notice around town, Charlie, downtown, there are some bike racks that the bicycle racks look like bicycles.
Yes,
they're standing upright and have Bartlesville Beeville mm-hmm. on the back wheel, kind of stamped in their stamp metal. They're bolted to the ground, and there are bike racks that are available. And if you're a business and you'd like a bike rack in front of your business, at no charge, you can call 918-338-4253. And Nancy Waring is available to talk about that. So give her a call, 918-338-4243, Nancy Waring. Who I think it was unfair, her romantic husband just sprung a Bahama vacation on her. She just got back from a week or 10 days in the Bahamas, which who can live up to that?
It's darn near impossible. And what a disappointment to have to come home from the Bahamas.
It really would be, and it'd be kind of like our water utilities director just got back from, I don't know, some exotic beach in Florida.
Really?
Where there are white sands and beautiful places to be. Morning, Mr. Lauritsen.
Morning, Ed. Yes. Very similar to really the Caney River. I likened it to the Caney River this time of year. Yes.
Excellent. I wade down through the copperheads and the poison ivy and the mosquitoes, and you can get right down in there.
That's right. Yeah, cut yourself on some rocks
as you get down in there.
Yes.
Welcome home, Mr. Lauritsen.
Well, welcome. I'm glad to be here.
I appreciate you being here this morning. Terry's our water utilities director. How long have you been director of water utilities now?
3 years, roughly.
Time flies.
Time certainly does.
It certainly does. I noticed I left out the having fun part.
We're having fun, yes.
I brought Terry along today, Charlie, for a couple of reasons. First of all, as Water Utilities Director, how's our water supply?
Doing very well. Doing well.
Our lakes are?
They're right at normal for this, really above normal for this time of year. But as far as the lakes themselves, they're right at the normal pool elevations. We had a nice wet spring for us, a lot of big rains that generate a lot of runoff. So we've really done well from a water supply standpoint.
And we do we anticipate any problems with water supply this summer? I mean, we're in the middle, just about the middle of July in a few days, 4 or 5 days. How are we doing?
We don't envision any problems with it. It's obviously something that can change fairly quickly as far as with drought conditions. And algae growth in this time of year, that's very prevalent. But we're still managing those water sources and testing it to ensure that the quality of the water is where we want it, so it can have an efficient treatment to get a good product to the customer.
Long-range water supply, Terry, let's do talk about quality of water. Our lakes are full. You did mention we have this time of the year when it gets hot and water still, we have a problem with algae, which gives birth to geosmin. Which is kind of the primary constituent in making our water smell and taste funny.
Yes.
What are we doing to control that?
Well, we do two things. One is at Hudson is where we really pull the water from. Lake Hudson is where we pull the water from to the plant primarily. We have 9 mixing units. And so if you've been out to the lake, you see these weird-looking contraptions in the water.
Battery-powered
mixing units, but what they're really...
What kind of batteries are on those units, do you know?
They're very robust. And
very nice batteries.
Watertight batteries, yes.
Okay.
But they mix the water to prevent the stagnation, and that's one of the tools that we use to combat algae growth. But the second one is that we test the water weekly for algae growth, and if the algae gets up to certain thresholds, then we do add an algaecide into it to help neutralize the algae and get it so it's not growing so prevalently.
Now these mixers pull water up from deeper in the lake?
They do.
And they pull it from close, how long are the tubes that are attached to those?
For 7 of them, they're 6 feet down. So they're pulling more of the surface water to keep really that water oxygenated.
Oxygenated.
Is that a word? Oxygenated.
Yeah,
okay, there you go. So we have those, and then we have 2 mixers that are closer to the intake, so they're closer to the south end of the lake, and those pull from roughly 26 feet down, and those are treating mainly iron and manganese. So when you mix water with air, that helps to neutralize the iron and manganese.
And air is an oxidizer.
Right.
And like chlorine or potassium permanganate, those are oxidizers, and we use those to help treat the water.
That's correct.
So as far as, are we having any algae problems at all, Terry?
Well, we did have some algae about a month ago, a little over a month ago, that we had to apply the algaecide into the lake. But for this point, it's really maintaining pretty well, and the mixers are doing what they're supposed to do.
Excellent. And I know you just sent out a water report.
We did, yes.
Terry, why do we do that?
Well, we're required to by the EPA every year to notify our customers about the quality of the water. And so a lot of the things that we put on there on the table and the very technical information is required by the EPA to notify and to inform the customers as far as what the water and the quality of the water is and what constituents are present within the water.
And if people have questions about that water, I mean, when they get, I know that people call, who can they call? It's on there, but who? Give them a number.
Well, they can call me at 918-338-4116, and I'll be happy to go through the report and review any of the questions or answer any questions they have. If you looked on there, you'll notice there's a lot of constituents that we don't test for yearly, for example, lead and copper. And that's for a couple of reasons. One is lead and copper really doesn't change much over the years, contingent on that you don't have any prior violations and that you haven't changed your treatment process, your treatment chemicals, or anything from that perspective. So we have not changed anything for the last 10 years on our treatment process, and we have not had a violation that I'm aware of for either lead or copper since we've been testing for it.
Yeah, I think we had 25 years ago, we had some lead problems, and Bartlesville began an aggressive program of locating and replacing at no cost to the homeowners their lead service lines. Lead service lines were a common years and years and years ago, but we started changing out. I think that's what Detroit's problem is. Detroit doesn't have a lake problem, a lead lake problem. They have a problem with lead service lines that that are tied to the houses, and that's why they're putting filtration devices on there. But we don't have lead problems because 25, 30 years ago, when I started with the city, they were in an aggressive program then of finding, locating, and pulling out the lead service lines and replacing them back then with copper.
Yeah.
Which has that problem that existed then, we knew that there was a problem. We began to take aggressive action and replace those lines. And we don't have that problem anymore.
Well, good. Yeah, we don't have the test results show that we don't have any issue with it. Now, we don't test every line or every house in the city of Bartlesville. We get a representative sample to conduct those tests. If a homeowner is curious about lead or copper in their service line, if they have a house that's built before 1980 is typically the cutoff as far as what they look for. And either copper or lead solder was common in houses built before that time frame. There's tests that they can do. You can buy some of those tests online if you want to run that, or if they want to call 918-338-4116, and we can give them more direction on testing and what they can do to take a look at that to see what they have at their home.
Yeah, but to be very plain, we do not have any problems with lead.
No, and we add what's called a corrosion inhibitor. So really what happens is as the water goes through, if it is abrasive, and chlorine is an abrasive chemical that is used to disinfect water, that it will actually leach that lead or copper from the pipe with just the water running through that. So we do add a polyphosphate, which is a corrosion inhibitor. We've done that for decades, so that it provides basically a film or a protection within the pipe to prevent that leachate from coming into the water and into your home and through your tap.
Terry, let's change gears for just a moment. Let's talk about long-range water supply.
Okay.
And I'm going to bring up the Caney River here in just a moment. But back in 2001, a long-range water committee was formed. There are 15 members on that committee that are made up from individuals all over Washington County. Osage County is included. And these 15 members were put together. They were tasked with the job of finding a long-term water supply and to explore with the federal government, specifically the Corps of Engineers is who we partnered with, and we came up with a plan for long-range water.
We did, and that was really as a result from a drought that we experienced in 2001-2002 that really saw or revealed the vulnerability of our water supply during a drought to being robust or viable enough for the future. And let me back up just a little bit just to let the listeners know where we get our water from. So we pull from three water sources. We have Gila Lake, which is a Corps-owned lake, and that's our largest storage vessel for water. We have over 70% of our water is stored at Gila Lake. From Gila Lake, the water is pumped to Hudson Lake, and that lake is a city-owned lake. It's a very small lake. It only represents about 9% of our storage that we have within our water supply system. And then we also pull water from the Caney River right next to Kitty Park. And that was the original water supply for Bartlesville way back, even before you and I were on this green earth, right, Ed?
Bartlesville Water Company.
Bartlesville Water Company. So that was the original water supply.
Tom Holland was helped build it.
He was in his teenage years.
Yes, then. And he helped build the brick structure that's there.
Very good, very good. And so we still have that structure. We still pull water from the Caney River to this day. But the Caney River represents roughly about 20% of our water supply as far as the storage that comes through or is within that system. And so with the drought of 2001, the Water Resources Committee partnered with the Corps of Engineers to do what's called a planning assistance to state types of study. In essence, what they were tasked with is how much water do we need in the future? How viable or what's the long-term outlook for the lakes because of sedimentation within them? And where do we go for water in the future? And so they spent a number of years working with the Corps and looking at the various scenarios for all the way from Call Lake, Ulagal, Birch, Skytook. They looked at every lake that was within a reasonable distance to us. But where they resulted or landed in is Copan Lake. Copan Lake is a Corps of Engineers lake as well. It is just east of Hula Lake, but it was the most economically viable lake for us to pull water supply from to meet our long-term needs.
And we have, we're working in partnership with the Corps of Engineers. Several years ago, we had a drought. 2007 ended with a flood. I mean, that was our last in 2007, July. And then we moved toward a dry spell. And in that drought that we had, the Corps of Engineers released water from Copan Lake, and we drew water from the Caney River.
That's right. Yeah, we've done that a couple of times, where the Corps has worked with us to do what they consider an emergency contract to release water for us to use for our water supply. We have not contracted yet with Copan to secure the water storage rights. In essence, how that works is the Corps, you contract with the federal government to purchase storage rights, so you're buying a piece of the bucket. So you're not, whether water's there or not, but you're buying a piece of the bucket. The Corps has, they redid their formula to calculate the water storage rights back in the late 80s. And that changed the formula drastically in the sense that, for example, we bought water storage rights in the early 80s from Hula Lake, and we spent $68 per acre foot.
Say it again, how many?
$68 per acre foot.
Now, folks will be curious about an acre foot, but we'll do that in another program.
That's right.
But $68 per acre foot, that's a lot of water.
That's a lot of water that we purchased the storage rights for.
And now, that's what we get. We don't own the lakes. The Corps owns the lakes, and we simply rent the storage area.
That's correct. Now, for Copan, that's that same unit as far as measuring the acre foot, that cost would be just under $1,600, so $1,600 per acre foot to contract with the Corps of Engineers for the storage rights presently. And so that's a big disparity between the $68 and $1,600. And that's really just not a economic or viable for us to purchase water rights at that cost, because we would have to then relay or transfer those costs to the customer. And that's just not something that council was willing to do. And so they've done a couple things. One, to change the formula really does take an act of Congress. It's not something that we can do at the local level, the state level. It has to go through the both the legislative and executive branch to enact a bill to change the pricing formula for that.
Now, the city of Bartlesville has been working to change that pricing formula, and Congressman Jim Bridenstine and Congressman Mark Wayne Mullen has been lending a hand with that, and also Senator Jim Inhofe has been working with us to try and leverage Senator Lankford, the pricing on water.
Right.
The GAO, the study that the Corps of Engineers did, Bartlesville was a test case for the entire United States of America on water pricing.
Right.
And the GAO has looked at the study that was done by the Corps and said that it was missing something. I was going to say it's junk, Charlie, but that's what they said. But yeah. I'll skip that phrase. So it's having to be completely redone.
Well, it is, but we really don't know the path forward as far as the time frame for it, and that's a concern for us, because things typically don't run very quickly in the federal level, and this is something that we want to get some resolution to sooner rather than later with it.
All right, let's skip ahead a little bit about where we are today.
Okay.
Terry, you serve on a committee of three, I think?
Yes.
Who serves on that committee with you in the state?
It's Ken Kaminsky, who is the Water Utility Director for the City of Norman, and then Asfana Jabbar, who is the Water Utilities Director for the City of Lawton.
Lawton, Oklahoma. So from the northeast corner to the southwest corner and right in the middle of the state,
yep.
The three of you engineers working in the water field are helping craft the future of long-term water reuse.
Well, we are, and this really was as a result from 2013 with the droughts that were experienced statewide and primarily in Oklahoma City area.
The western part of the United
States. The western part of the state. That the state had put forward legislation that encouraged the Oklahoma Department of Environmental Quality to encourage water reuse, and specifically for potable uses. And so that really set a chain of events into motion that the state has developed regulations for non-potable reuse, but now they're working on regulations for a potable reuse. So non-potable is something that you don't drink, potable is something that you do. And so that's the distinction between those two terms. But we're continuing to work with the state to craft regulations. Reuse is not a new thing. It's done very commonly in the western United States and Florida, up in the state of Washington. They have regulations in the books as far as reuse. So it's not something that's new to America. It's been used elsewhere. It's been used for decades elsewhere. So it's just a matter of getting us comfortable and that level of confidence moving forward with regulation that will accommodate.
It's just new to us.
It's new to us, exactly.
So we don't have to rethink the wheel. There have been states that have been practicing water reuse wisely for years and years.
For decades, yes.
And so we're moving progressively forward with that.
Yes, we are. But the state doesn't have regulations on the books yet. But we have a unique scenario in the sense that we have a wastewater treatment plant that discharges into the Caney River. And that wastewater treatment plant is roughly a quarter mile downstream of the raw water intake structure there right across from the kiddie park. So we have a discharge and a wastewater treatment plant that's very, very close to a potential water supply source that we can use and that we currently use. And so we've been working with the state and looking at some technical information through an engineering study to see what's the feasibility of reusing our wastewater for a potable or drinkable application. So we have contracted with Tetra Tech, who's out of Tulsa, and they are in the process of evaluating what's the cost, is it safe, and what treatment would be necessary both on the wastewater side and potentially on the clean water side to make that water source a viable source for the city.
And what typically on an annual basis, what do we use on a daily basis?
We average about 6 million gallons a day.
So on average through 365 days, the water treatment plant supplies about 6 million gallons a day.
Yep.
Into the system, that's because that's what we on average use.
Right.
What are our water rights on the Caney River?
Well, right now we have just under 6 million gallons a day of water rights on the Caney River. And so that works very well. It just, as luck would have it, that we could potentially almost satisfy on a yearly basis our total water demand just from the river. So where we're at with the study is that they've done some initial investigations and some initial modeling with the river to see what it can assimilate as far as once you discharge your waste into the river. There's some environmental issues or environmental things that go on as far as with the bugs and the oxygen and things that we have to note for and plan for. But really the initial results from that study were that we can discharge into the river north of our intake structure next to Kitty Park, and we can do up to about 4 million gallons a day at our current treatment level. So if we wanted to discharge more, we can go with a more robust treatment system. And so they're in the process of looking at what type of treatment would we need to move more up and what that cost would entail. And so that process has been done from the initial standpoint. So we'll have results and we'll present the results in next month at the Sanitary Sewer Improvement Oversight Committee as well as City Council. But then, during the interim, we have received and we have applied for two grants from the Bureau of Reclamation. And one we've received for a feasibility study with water reuse. And the second one is the construction of those improvements, which they notified us that we've made the first cut and they would like to proceed with the award for it.
Well, Terry, it sounds like we have that will be a plan to supply water into our future.
It will. It'll get us for the next 50 plus years using this source.
Of course, when we did the plant assistance state study, the water reuse was not quite an issue, and that is, we hadn't really considered that in the long-term water committee. But here in the last few years, it's become something that we believe is very viable for the city of Bartlesville.
Well, we do, and with the Water Resources Committee, those rules weren't on the books, and if you had talked to the state back in 2001 and 2004, they would have told you just, we don't do it, don't even ask us. And so it's really been a recent development to allow water reuse, and that's something that we're hopeful to take advantage of.
Well, Terry, I appreciate your work on the state committee that's working on promulgating rules for water reuse, and it looks like we have a bright future for water supply.
Well, I think so. It's we're looking for a source that's viable and robust enough for a drought condition, and I believe that we'll get there using this source.
Thank you, Mr. Lauritsen.
Thank you.
Charlie, it's been a delightful morning to spend with you.
Thank you, sir.
I would say God bless the city of Bartlesville.
American Heritage Bank, now serving the Osage region of Bartlesville, Pawhuska, and Barnsdall.
This is KWON Bartlesville and 93.3 FM K227 CQ Bartlesville.